Welcome to Caffeinated New Jersey, show brewed right here inside Cedar Beans Coffee Joint in Cedar Grove, New Jersey, where good conversations always happen as naturally as the coffee pours. Each episode is a seat at the table with artists, makers, and storytellers digging into what drives them to create and connect. I'm your host, Dave Fletcher. Thanks for spending a little time with us. Some artists use canvas. Others utilize their surroundings. Today's guest, Joe Iorato, is known for creating work that lives both in plain sight and hidden in the smallest corners. From his iconic Little Climbers series to large-scale public murals across cities like Newark, Jersey City, Wildwood, and Miami during Art Week. His work has been featured by Alpinist magazine, connecting his visual storytelling to the deeper idea of climbing, progress, struggle, and achievement. You might walk right past one of his pieces, or you might stop and stare without fully knowing why. But possibly at the core of it all, his work is about perspective, what we notice, what we miss, and how we move through the world together. This is a conversation about creativity, observation, risk, and what it really takes to keep climbing. Welcome back to Caffeinated New Jersey. I'm your host, Dave Fletcher. Hey, Joe. Welcome.
Man, that was,
that all right?
Some intro. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Cool. Well, I'm going to jump right into it. I'm really excited to have you here. Yeah, I appreciate that. And I feel like you're an unknown sort of jewel in this area that not a lot of people know about the breadth of the work that you do. But my first question is kind of, when someone encounters your work, whether it's a tiny climber or a massive mural, what do you hope happens at that moment that they come and come?
You know, my work is largely based on my own experiences. And I think that's, for me, when somebody encounters, well, there's two different things that happen. The smaller works are meant to be more intimate. I want you to feel as though, like, you know, for this moment in time, that 1 second that you're there, you and the piece, there's an intimate moment that's shared. It's something that maybe you can relate to. Maybe it's just something that changes the course of your day and how you feel and how you think. So that's, and then there's the murals on a much larger scale that oftentimes there are messages of hope and there's messages of that should take you back to a simpler time and a place. And so I just want you to feel good about it when you see it, whether it makes you smile, whether it makes you think, but I don't want you to think too hard about it either. So I tend to put work out there that's a little bit personal, and hopefully you can relate to it when you see it. It's really, for me, that's really what it is.
When you create that work, do you think it's more about being seen or being discovered?
Well, the smaller pieces, most especially, I love to create works that are made to be discovered. I put these things in places where I find they tell a story. I'm not thinking about, well, you know, like, I want 1,000 people to see this. I don't want everybody on their way to work today to walk by this. And it's not my motivation. My motivation is to tell the story, to create a piece of art, put it outside and have it tell whatever story it is, whatever environment it lives in, And if it means that it's somewhere off to the side of a railroad track and only one person ever sees it before it disappears, then that's what it is. So they're really meant to be discovered. I don't really think too much about how many people will discover them or see them. It's not about the quantity of the masses, I guess, that encounter them. It's more about, they do it for me, really. You know, I do it for me first, and then hopefully they'll be discovered as well. Yeah.
Going back, like, were you born in New Jersey?
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
So I was born in Paterson, St. Joseph's. I grew up in Clifton, then Elmwood Park, and then moved to Montclair. Like, when I finally went off on my own, I was going to Montclair University and fell in love with the town and just decided I was going to get a little apartment. I had a little studio there, and I've been in Montclair ever since then. And then once we had kids, we just moved next door to Cedar Grove. Mm-hmm. But I'm a Jersey boy my whole life.
Yeah. Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have a brother and a sister.
Both creative people?
Yeah, they are very much so. My brother lives in California now. He's a graphic designer, but he also does, he's an analyst for MMA. He does his own podcast and he does his own, analyzing for the fights and stuff. Super creative. My sister is very talented. She studied to become a pastry chef. So in the culinary arts, both creative.
So you growing up in a creative family, when was the first time that you created something that you sort of said, well, this is me?
It's kind of a hard thing to pinpoint. I think when you're creative in general, and you could probably attest to this yourself because you're creative. I mean, you just are, right? You grow up, like I grew up in my bedroom drawing, mimicking the comic books, sketching just things. When people were out doing other things, I was in my bedroom drawing, and it's where I spent my free time and just creating. Kind of always knew I was going to take towards sort of a creative path. And I knew I was an artist at a young age. I knew that's just who I was and what I wanted to be. But, later on, it was the struggle of, where do I fit in the art world? Like in art, in creativity in general, like where do you fit in? Like what is it that I'm going to do? But it was a very young age that I just knew at some point, like I wasn't meant to be a doctor. I wasn't meant to be a lawyer. I was going to be an artist or a creative in some shape or form.
That's interesting. I mean, for myself, I remember, in school, I was inspired by teachers. Did you have, some mentors when you were younger that sort of pushed you in that direction?
In high school, my high school art teacher was very, very influential to me in sort of harnessing, like really like taking it seriously, right? And just letting me spend countless hours before school, after school, whenever I felt like it, in the classroom drawing, giving me projects that were, off, weren't necessarily meant for the entire class. We started drawing different types of fantasy comics and things together, and I'd stay there later after, school, and just to finish drawing these big posters. And she really kind of she really harnessed that. But I was always a little bit kind of self-motivating, I guess, just and a little bit all over the place, and just wanting to discover everything I possibly could do to make stuff.
Did you find inspiration from a lot of those, a lot of the street artists, like whether it be graffiti artists from, the 70s, like that whole kind of movement that was happening in the city? You were pretty close to it in this area. I grew up pretty far from it in upstate New York, but did you find yourself like sneaking into the city, checking out some of the subway cars, checking out the, what the latest tags were and stuff like that?
Yeah, I'd love to say yeah, but no. But I will say this. I was very so if I go back to my earliest memories of some of the things I really loved, like when I was really young, I loved hip hop. I was a break dancer. This was like when I was, and I just spend my days outside on a piece of cardboard, and there was that culture that was surrounded by it, right? And then eventually in my teens, I discovered skateboarding, and skateboarding was my life for many years. Like really took it in, and I think both of those things kind of share the same sort of street culture, whether it be graffiti or street art. And you're sort of it just it makes its way into like who you are. And but I never was one to like go out and write my name and have a tag. And like it just wasn't my motivation. I loved it and I loved the characters and I would draw them on my books in school and things like that. But I wasn't necessarily like some of these guys who are now my friends. They grew up and they were 10, 12 years old and they were bombing trains, and they were out there like, and that wasn't me. Like, it's just, I'm not going to pretend it was, they deserve that honor. And so, it wasn't until much later on that after being involved in it all those years and being inspired by, the earlier graffiti artists and then the street artists that came in the 90s and things like that, because they're two totally separate things. Eventually, in the late 90s, decided that it was just something I wanted to try. It was another creative avenue, and I decided to start, doing stuff in the street.
Looking at kind of, quite a bit of your work, it looks like you're like a person that constantly notices things that other people miss. cracks in the sidewalk, or the way even like certain things have grown up around train tracks, and like how maybe certain whether it's nature or man have invaded certain areas. Has your mind always kind of worked that way?
I guess so.
Yeah.
It's kind of to go back to what you asked me earlier about, what I want people to take away from it. What I really should have said, sometimes it takes me a
That's
minute
okay.
to remember it, but
Yeah.
what you just touched on is really something special. It's just a kind of about stopping, slowing down, and taking in the details. We're always like we tend to go from like point A to point B, and there's nothing in between. I have a tendency, I like to look around. I like to, you notice things. What these woodcuts have done, these little woodcuts that I started creating, what they've done for me, they've forced me to slow down and look at things that I wouldn't typically look at. It could be the crack in the sidewalk. It could be a swatch of paint that dripped on a wall that's a totally different color than the rest of the wall. And how did it get there? And now I want to find a way to tell a story of why it got there. And so when you come across these things that I put out there, it's about, stopping for a second and taking in the details and seeing a different perspective and a different story. And so for me, it's always been, that's been the thing for me. I take these, they take me on my own adventures. I see things I would normally overlook, and then I put them where they can complete this sort of narrative. But also, a lot of this thought process that I have, that I've had with these over the years, I really think comes from being a skateboarder and a rock climber. And I say that because when you're a skater, you're looking at architecture and street and things differently than most people. Stairs are a playground, and a curb is a playground, and a park bench is a playground, and all these things that people would sit on, you're using them for different things. And the same thing with rock climbing. You can look at a piece of rock. You can look at a boulder, and it's a nice boulder. It's just a piece of rock. But I see a line in it, and I see a way to get from here to here. And it's almost like it was put there just for me to climb. And you see these little holes and these little cracks and these things that. So, yeah, my eye is trained, I think, to look at things a little bit differently just because of the things that I love. And I think maybe that translates into the bigger picture.
That's cool. Now, do you find it hard to turn that off when you're, kind of moving through life? I mean,
I don't think you ever want to turn it
yeah.
off. I really don't. I like, if anything, I struggle to keep it on, because sometimes I do forget where I am. And actually today I was walking the dog. We were down by Turtleback Zoo, around that like reservoir over there, and there just was this pipe that was sticking out of the water. It was this really cool old funky green pipe that, and I stopped and I just started taking pictures of it, because I'm like, I'm going to come back here, and this is going to be something. I don't know what it is yet, but there's something cool about this green pipe, and I wish I could see that all the time, because it would always lead me to keeping the imagination going. And now in the back of my head, I have another story I want to tell, so I want to keep that on. I don't necessarily want to turn it off. I think as I get older and things get a little crammed and life gets in the way, like I said, it's a little bit harder to keep on with anything.
Yeah. So the little climber stuff, because I know you've built a nice kind of niche with that work alongside of the other stuff. Do you recall where that kind of originated from?
So it was interesting, because I started doing the cutouts. It was around 2009 is when I really started doing the cutouts. I'd been doing street art prior to that, and primarily stenciling. And we can talk about that too. But for me, it was kind of like I didn't want to do what everybody else was doing. I think there's a lot of stencil artists. There's a lot of different types of street artists doing their thing, and they're very good at it. And I just, you kind of want to find your own voice. And for me, all of a sudden, it was just kind of like I started cutting these little things out of cardboard. I would keep them with me, because I was like, the thing about stenciling is it's a little bit restrictive. Like you create an image, and then you kind of like, you don't have a whole lot of freedom once that image is created. You just kind of got to paint it somewhere. It is, But if I create it ahead of time and I have this character, remember when you're a kid, you have color forms and you'd have these little, you have like a thing and you just put the color forms and you could tell a story by putting them in place, right? So what if I made like little color forms for the street? Now I don't just need to paint on a wall. I'm not restricted to the brick of a wall or like a, I can put it anywhere. I can put it on a fire hydrant. I can put it on a curb, on a park bench. I could go and put it in a puddle after it rains. There's, you have the whole world to play with. So I started with these little pieces and eventually it just, the stories changed. They evolved into, you know, started making pieces that were a little bit more permanent and really like trying to find like, what is it? What, where am I going to, what's the story? Like, what am I going to do? So I brought things like skateboarding, climbing, my family, watching my children grow up and the curiosities that they had and creating just the characters, keeping them in my bag and then going out into the world and finding the stories for those things. But it started around 2009, 2010. Really, just as a way to separate myself and not just be restricted to working on a wall and taking these pieces that I created at home at the time in my garage and just going out in the world and finding where they belong.
Right. So you'd kind of put these things out there and then you would photograph them. And that's
Yes.
kind of the initial sort of hit of like, this is how you envision it kind of living. But then is there anything that like, have you ever been online somewhere and saw like your piece that was photographed in a different way that made you think about it differently?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've seen lots of people photograph the pieces. Sometimes they don't photograph the pieces, they'll steal them instead. So
Well, they're
they're cool.
cool.
But and again, it's part of, putting your work in the street is there's the ephemeral nature to it, which I also love. The photograph for me had become the final piece of art. Because that's the actual story, that's the narrative, that's and it all comes down to playing with scale and perspective, right? You can take a little 10-inch painting, and if you put it in the right place and you photograph it from the right angle, it will look like it's a life-size person in a place that it's impossible to be. But you have to look at it again and say, well, where are they? Is this really like, are they really at the base of an iceberg, or is this just a little snowdrift outside on a curb? And so, like, those are the fun things for me. The fun thing is not just telling the story, but finding a way to play with scale and perspective. And so, that has largely become my thing. I mean, I work on all scales, but when I go out with these little things and I find that right place, and it gives you a problem when you look at it. Before AI and all this stuff, people were like constantly telling me that it was all Photoshop, and I'm like, okay, it's Photoshop. Now it's like everything's AI. It was like,
Sure.
oh no, there's no way it's Photoshop. Well, what's so hard to believe? It's a little painting put out in the world and photographed, you know?
Yeah, I think we're unfortunately living in a society right now where anything that moves us in a very profound way, we don't believe it because
Because we
we don't
don't believe.
believe that we can be moved.
That's true. Yeah.
I think that there's something so interesting about the fact that you've started to build what are these in essence environments out of these little pieces. And some understandably are celebrities, musicians, and some are your children and probably friends and family that you put out there. Is there anything that you ever put out there that you were kind of you went back and actually reclaimed, that you loved it so much? It's like, all right, I got the picture, I got what I want. Now I'm going to take this back. I don't want to leave it there anymore.
Like I said before, well, I like to say no, but yeah, I have.
Yeah.
I've done it more than a few times. And the reality is sometimes it's also a product of I've worked so hard on this thing and I don't really know if I actually told the right story with it this time. So I photograph it and I put it there and I say to myself, like, well, is there a better placement for this? Is there a better spot for this? Is this really where I want it to be? And if I second guess myself, there are times I take them back. And it's not so much that I want to hold on to the because they're so sentimental or special to me, because I can always make another one. But It's because I don't know if I found the right place for it. And even so, even if nobody ever saw it, like I would know it's not the right place for it. And that bothers me. So it's like I have to find the right place for it. So I've done that on more than a few occasions, and I still do. And sometimes it's just about, and also, look, I've had someone that I find the perfect place on the railroad tracks, and I've wandered lots of railroad tracks. But do I really want to leave it on the tracks just to get destroyed by a train? Nobody will ever see it. So sometimes it is just about that story in that moment. But a lot of times when they're in the city and they're in places where the public can discover them, that's where they stay.
Right. So you talk. I mentioned a little bit about celebrities or musicians and stuff. What musicians like really inspire you?
Oh man, music is like one of the biggest driving forces in my life, when with like inspiration especially. I think my tastes in music, they vary greatly from folk to rock to metal to, God, everything in between. I listen to everything. So it really just depends on my mood. Some of my favorite bands, like, I mean, Iron Maiden has been since I'm 14 years old. Like, I mean, I'm still that kid. Like, Iron Maiden, Bruce Springsteen, Jersey boy, but I grew up in high school and my buddies and like just chasing all these concerts, and I still listen to Bruce. All these, there's just metal. Like I said, there's just so many musicians I wouldn't even know where to begin. But music is a very big driving force, and the blues is a really big one. I can't believe I can say that, but so I'm a big fan of the blues, and a lot of those blues musicians often find their way into my works. I find that particular style of music and the idea of sort of that lonesome wandering drifter, I paint a lot of that stuff too, and that largely stems from my love of the blues and sort of that emotion. So yeah, I mean, we could talk all day about music, man. It's everything.
Did you ever do any Eddie,
When I was a
out there?
kid, I never did. It's funny. I never did like an Eddie woodcut or anything like that. I thought about it, but the thing about Eddie is like it's somebody else's art, and it's like, so it's no. But I have painted musicians, you know what I mean? And like, I have Chris Cornell, Mark Lanegan, Bruce Springsteen, Bruce Dick. Paint all these guys, and I have Colter Wall. I mean, all these, and I put them out there, and it just.
Any of them ever see it and reach out to you?
Yeah, I've had a couple. I've had quite a few. There's a guy named Sean James who I really love. I painted him out in Deep Ellum, and it was on the back of a venue that he actually wound up playing, took pictures with it. And then Leon Bridges was another one. I had painted him out in Texas, and next thing I know, he's on his Instagram feed with the piece. And it's really cool when the musicians find their way to the works, and you're like, well, this is awesome, and Fantastic Negrito is another one. I painted him a couple of times. I just love his look, and I love his music. And he's seen some of my work. There's a, it's really fun when that happens, for sure.
You have any musicians out there that you are still like, I can't wait. I want them to find it. They must find this.
Not at the moment, but there are definitely musicians I want to paint. And the problem with me, though, a lot of the things are, I don't paint anything unless I have permission to paint it. If it's not my foot, I'm not my photograph. So there is that thing where even though I'm doing stuff, sometimes it's not really for money, and it's just to go out there. I like to find a photographer and get the permission, and I want to do it the right way, because they're the artist first who's taken the photo, and so there's all that. And so sometimes a little bit of there's pain in the neck, and so I work off of my own photos and stuff. There are a lot of musicians I want to paint, for sure, and hopefully at one point I'll get to.
So how, like, talking a little bit about kind of inspiration and stuff, how does creating some stuff like larger scale murals compare with the smaller stuff?
Very different, very different. I try to, up until very recently, actually, the process was still the same, though. I fell in love with the process of stenciling. And after being very restless and trying to figure out who I was and what I did best as an artist in any creative form, I somehow found my way to creating artwork with stencils. Drawing with a knife, basically, is what I say it is. I just draw with an X-Acto knife. I think maybe when when I sometimes I think about where it started, I'm like, my dad was a printer. I used to sit downstairs in his basement, where his presses were running, and help him cut rubolith and
Oh, rubolith,
studding.
amberlith,
Yeah,
sure.
you know, like, you know, like, and I, It was like a kid, and I still got familiar. Not necessarily really became like why I, but I knew what it was like to work with a knife. And when I decided I wanted to do stuff in the street, I knew I wasn't a graffiti artist. I knew I wasn't, my motivation wasn't to write my name. I have a lot of respect for the guys that do. It just wasn't what I wanted to do. And so I was like, I really like the aesthetic of things like, with guys like, Shepard Fairey and Banksy and Logan Hicks and Chris Stein and all these guys back who were doing like everything was different. They looked different, but it was the same process. And so I was like, I'm going to try that. I think that's the way for me to create with X-Acto. And so everything I'd made, whether it was 10 inches or it was 10, 20 feet, was done with stencil. More recently, though, I got into doing much larger work. And when you start getting into walls that are 80 feet, like I did a wall in Buffalo last year that was just massive. It was the biggest wall I ever done.
For the Children's Hospital, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
it was in coordination with OSHI and up in Buffalo, and there was a festival around. It was a really great thing, and I painted a big kid dressed as a superhero with the words "Never give up" on it. We had kids create stars along the bottom of the wall for it. Like it was really cool. But the wall was beyond anything I'd ever painted. And I knew like you can't just go up there with sheets of paper and paint like a 100-foot mural. And so I changed my process for that. And so I learned a lot. And last year I did a lot of stuff that wasn't really, not stencil based in a way that, I work with an outline, but the layers were painted by hand and brushes. But for the most part, everything else is done with stencil. Like even if I'm doing like a 10, 20-foot wall now, I'm still working with stencils, but I'm doing it in a way that is not hand cut. So my process would be to draw it first. I illustrate everything. So I don't my it's weird because I try to make my art not necessarily look like a stencil. It looks like an illustration. So I draw them first, then I figure out how to create the bridges for the layers, right? And if I have to cut over a certain size that won't fit in my studio, if it's over like 10, 12 feet and I can't do it in my studio, then I'll format that in Illustrator and have it cut by lasers. And we'll do that in tiles. And then that becomes my sort of map for painting. But yeah, the process is very different, but also very the same for the most part. It is a long way of getting to it,
No,
but
that's because I mean, I've seen your work, and I've seen down in Wildwood that piece with your kids, right? Or in that
So, yeah, so
house.
that particular piece was the woman who owned the hotel. It was that mural was about inclusion. Those are her kids.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so that one was actually cut and drawn by hand. That was done a few years back. But yeah, I've been lucky to do a lot of stuff down the shore. And sometimes it includes my kids, sometimes it includes other people's kids or
Yeah.
other things. But yeah, that was the woman's children.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
A lot of this is about storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of what you do is about storytelling. And, you know, where do you think that that kind of storytelling instinct that you have comes from?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Really don't know. It's a hard. It's kind of a. I don't know. I mean, I do consider myself a storyteller. As I, it's a weird thing to say, like, well, that, because I really am trying to tell stories with these pieces. Like, the one. I think on the. I don't know where it comes from and why. I've always loved to write. So I do like to write, and I used to like to write stories, and I used to like to, write poetry, and maybe it's that.
Yeah.
But even with music, like I like music that tells a story. Like I just like stories,
Right.
And so I guess it's only natural that I want my art to be in that same sort of realm, as opposed to something that you see that maybe you don't understand. And I get it. Like sometimes maybe my art. Maybe my art sometimes feels like too pedestrian. Maybe it feels a little too literal. Maybe it feels a little bit, but the stuff that I paint is largely based on my own experiences, and I'm trying to retell those stories so that maybe I feel good about it, but you might relate to it as well.
Sure.
But I don't necessarily go out of my way to think like, well, how can I be a better storyteller? These are things I just like to randomly think about and put out there.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, the story is that kind of human beings,
naturally, that's our instinct, is to tell stories. And, you know, despite all of the technological advances, you know, that have occurred over the our lives, because, you know, we both kind of started out analog. You know, you're talking about, you know, Rubylith and Amberlith, you know, and we went into digital space, or we experienced it anyway. For me, you know, there was a time where the people that I was working with were the typographers and the you know, the people that came in and, you know, cut the color overlays that went into to a magazine or into a newspaper. But then computers came along and enabled us to start doing that kind of stuff. And unfortunately, those people kind of moved out of the way. But having that appreciation for how shapes are rendered and how they're cut are, you know, are things that I think give you and give, you know, give people who are of that era an advantage to the understanding how something is created. Did you ever see somebody like discover like something that you just put out and they didn't know that you did it?
Oh yeah, man, I've seen that. Yeah, I mean, one so when I've seen that quite often, especially when I travel and I do things in towns where I'm going to be in the city for a week and I'm going to, you know, do things and you put things up around. In fact, I'm going out to the Netherlands to do a festival in September. And we like, we'll do these things where we'll like put 20 pieces out and around. And like, just so happens when I'm around is you'll watch people discovering them. And it's really amazing to see their reaction. Sometimes they get it and sometimes they don't. But the best was that when I first started doing this stuff, I was living on Church Street in Montclair. And we were living right up on the top floor. And I remember I was just cutting my teeth, like doing stencils outside, like single layer, like very simple. And I was doing like, it was like Ben Harper. I remember I was like cutting like pick, like from Ben, one of Ben Harper's album covers. And he had this long curly hair and it's just like a simple, wanted to kind of see that idea of, you remember like Shepherd Fairey did the Obey campaign, mm-hmm. like the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. Well, for someone who's like first wanting to try something, like, well, that was going to be my Obey thing. I was going to do Ben Harper. Nobody knows, instead of trying to try it, right? So I painted these things, but I would sit in my window because they were, I could see them from my window in the location that I painted them, just to watch people's reactions. And I would sit up there at night just having dinner, just to watch people. I watched them get buffed. I watched people angry over them. I watched people like just stop and turn around, start talking. And those interactions were really cool to me. And it's actually what led me to want to do more. Mm. I never really wanted to, you know, when I was a kid, I always had a really hard time like showing my work in general. And to like, my mother saw us like a whole closet full of stuff that like will never make it out of the house. And so I found that there was something really interesting to me and intriguing about being able to put the work out there, having it seen, but nobody needed to know that I did it. You know, and so I was, you know, I was living this, you know, going out and painting around town and doing things, and nobody knew I was doing it but my wife and me, and it was fun, you know what I mean? And I like to watch those reactions.
Is the creative act of working on these stencils and getting them ready to put out there and putting it somewhere as enjoyable as it is to see the reactions? Is that, do you get more out of the reaction or in the creation of it?
No, I get more. I get far more pleasure from the creation of it.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't put a lot of stock into, I try not to put a lot of stock into how people are going to react to the work or like how many people will even see the work. You know, for me, it really is about making the work, you know, like it just feels good to create something, for me to put it out there, for me to feel completed at the end of the day with what I had done and then, you know, start something new. And then the bonus is, you know, like when people start taking notice of it, you know, and I've been very fortunate in a way that like people took notice of the work early on. And I wasn't necessarily expecting it. You know, I don't think anybody at the time was going out, you know, thinking like we're going to make a living being a street artist, you know, or a graffiti artist or a, you know, like it wasn't the motivation. But of course, eventually the whole idea that people would take notice and find these reactions, it comes into play because it now it becomes your life. And so, of course, I do want people to take notice, but I try not to think too much about it. Right. I get the pleasure's making the work for me.
The inspiration from musicians and music and written music, you know, that's every songwriter you talk to, you ask them, you know, do they make the music for themselves or do they make it for the audience? And the majority of the people say, I make it for myself. Yeah. And I am always interested, you know, in the audience experiencing it, but the way they experience it isn't even necessarily how I felt about it right. when I was writing it. So you're kind of connecting that connective tissue between music and your art. You know, you can sort of see that you're a musician's heart.
Yeah, man, you know, I am a musician at heart. I would have loved to have been a musician.
Did you ever play anything?
You know, I play the guitar, but I'm a lefty playing a righty guitar. It's the only way I knew how, and so okay. I'm not very good at it. I mean, I'm not even going to pretend. I can strum and I have some chords, and I'm very basic. I play by ear. When I was growing up, I liked to play like keyboard by ear. You know, I think we tried to start a band like twice, and you know, I don't really have the voice for it. I like to think I do. You know, the shower knows best, I think, you know. But I find that music is such a high art emotionally. It can really, it's just such a great motivator. It's a great companion. It's everything you need it to be. And so it really is important. But yeah, like, I mean, going back to that, maybe I do feel the same way a musician feels, you know, like I make the art, make it for myself first. And, you know, I'm very fortunate that people have sort of taken to it in a way that it allows me to continue to make the art and support my family because it's a rarity and like certainly don't take that for granted. And so I don't mean to say it doesn't matter to me what people would take from it, because I guess it does, but I don't think about it when I'm making the work, if that makes sense.
Take me through like the ideal creative day for you.
The ideal creative day and the actual creative day are probably two different things, you know? Okay. The actual creative day is like, you know, you have to learn to be a business person too. I don't, you know, if you're going to do this, I think for anyone who's aspiring to be an artist and doing it full time, there comes a point you realize you can't just paint. You have to be an advocate for yourself and you have to be able to be a business person for yourself. So I spend a portion of my mornings just answering emails and talking to people and setting up meetings. Sometimes it's sitting in front of my computer and drawing up some ideas and things. And maybe then halfway through the morning towards the middle, I head to the studio, and I have a studio separate from my house, but I keep no electronics in my studio, like nothing. I just want to go there and paint. So I'll do anything I need to do on the computer at home. And then I go to the studio, and that's where I'll work for, you know, 6 to 8 hours, or depending upon what I'm doing, more to just paint and create work, you know, working on the scroll saw, working with the jigsaw, my woodworking tools, painting, cutting stencils, whatever it might be. I mean, ideally my ideal day working every day is like having that, like, that great idea that you're working towards, and like you just wake up in the morning like super psyched to just get up, get to it. Like a lot of times when I'm on projects or I'm traveling, or if I do like, or if I'm in the middle of getting ready for a show and I've got all these ideas lined up, I can just get up and just paint. Like that's like the ideal day, when you could just get up and it just get to painting and get to like creating and feel great and have the music going. And like that to me is just like, that is the ideal day. But there is a lot of there's a lot of other things that come with it that I'm not great at, you know, when the business side of things that really can sometimes set my day off completely. But yeah, I mean, I think any day you wake up and you're able to just do what you love, and you can just get up and paint and just feel really good about it, that's the ideal day for me. You know what I mean?
Do you regiment your day? Like you said, you kind of get up and you deal with the electronics first.
Yeah.
You answer your emails. And then is it kind of like, that's it. Now that's off. It's put aside in a box. I'm not going to answer any more emails, no matter what happens. We're living in obviously a world where phone is super, like, you know, all encompassing in our lives, and it's because, you know, that's how the companies want it to be. But that's a whole other conversation. you find that by turning off your phone, you don't have any anxiety, like, what if I'm missing a call? Do you tell people that are important to you, if you need me, you got to show up here because I'm not answering my phone?
Yeah, no, I just, when I'm in a workflow that I only answer the phone for my family, or if it's really, like, you know, I have people that I do work with that are very supportive of me and help me keep things moving. And if they call me, I'll answer the phone. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I'm not answering the phone. I'm just listening to music and I'm painting at that part of the day. Yeah, I'm pretty regimented. I try to be. I think, like, you have to be a self-motivator. It's like anybody else that goes to work. Like, if you don't stay on the schedule and you just let things go, it's very easy to just become lackadaisical, to start putting things off. You can lose your motivation super quickly.
Right.
And so I try to stay on a routine. I try really hard not to look at my phone much during the day, especially social media. I have a real big problem with social media these days. I just don't, I'm trying really hard to stay away from it. I know we need it. I think there's a place for it, but I also think it's, it could be terrible for an artist in general. There was a point before social media, you know, you're putting work out there and it's being discovered, or you're, you know, sometimes it's word of mouth or whatever. And then social media came along and it was really great. You could share your work with your closest friends and people you knew. And, like, you know, you were getting it out there. People took notice. I credit social media for sure for helping me to get to what I'm doing today. There's no question. But it got to a point where now what an artist really has to take caution of, I believe, you can't let it influence what you're doing because of how the algorithm tells you what you should be doing. Like, for instance, you can create something and it gets such an incredible reaction that you put you in a place where you start creating that thing. Maybe it's not coming from the right place, but you're creating it because it's like people are throwing their praise at you because somehow the algorithm locked you into it. And then sometimes, and this happens to me often, I paint things that I absolutely love. I almost hesitate sharing because I love it so much, and it's like crickets. And you say to yourself, what did I do wrong? People don't like it, right? And you really shouldn't care, but you do, because it taught you that, like, well, it puts you in this competitive thing that, like, well, how come this is getting this kind of a praise, and then I'm not getting this kind of a praise? And as much as you'd like to pretend that doesn't exist, it exists. It's very real. And I think, like, some artists will get caught up in the influence factor of things and, like, putting artwork out there for social media as opposed to letting social media just be a catalyst for their work. Mm-hmm. And so I try hard to stay off of it when I don't necessarily need to be on it. I've been a little bit more cautious to say about putting my work out there just because I feel better when I don't put it on social media for the most part. I create a lot of things that when I love it in particular, I kind of hold on to it for myself for a little while. And then I'll get the balls up to be like, well, let me put it out there, you know, and it's fine regardless of what happens. But I kind of get to keep it for me first. But yeah, so like, and then like during the day, you know, I like to keep up with what my friends are doing, other artists and things like that. So it's cool. But I try to stay off my phone. I try to stay off, you know, which is why I don't have Wi-Fi in my studio. I just don't want my computer. I don't deal with it. I just paint. It's where I go to create.
How's your, the community, you know, your community of artists that you've kind of come up alongside? Are you mentioned that, you know, you keep in touch, but do you have a nice little fraternity of other artists that you all are kind of like,
yeah,
you know, pushing each other in positive directions, and you can kind of lean on them and they can lean on you? And
sure. Dude, yeah. I've definitely made some really great friends in the art community. One in particular, his name is Logan Hicks. I consider him my mentor in this whole thing. You know, he's one of the OGs, like the godfather of like realism and multi-layer stencil art and street art, like long before I was doing it. We became very good friends. I started, you know, assisting him in his studio back in like 2008, and then we became close and done a ton of projects together, commercial projects and just together. And in fact, we're about to embark on a bunch of projects together, which are will start next month. A lot of artists in New York, graffiti artists, street artists. Some of the guys who, when I was a breakdancer as a kid, that I was like, looking at their stuff, and like I told you, I'd be drawing on my book and things like that. Now they're my friends, and I've been very fortunate to become a curate a festival in Kansas every year, and so I bring a lot of these guys that I know and have met over the years and become friends with. We support each other. I bring them out to share their work with that community. They've called on me to do projects. So yeah, it is a close knit community. It's a lot smaller of a circle than you think. It can be very competitive, but I do have, I do have a good handful of friends that we look out for each other, and it helps.
That's cool. Yeah. How this is a little bit of an aside, but he's been in the news lately.
Yeah.
Is Banksy.
Yeah.
How important from the community of artists that you're in, how important it is for people to know who he is?
It's not important at all.
Of course not.
And it's just kind of stupid, because the beauty is the mystery of it, right?
Right.
And whether that's actually him or not, it's even better, because that's still a mystery, because nobody's gonna. The reality is, like, why the hell would anybody really care who Banksy is? Like, why would you care? Like, what is it going to do to you? How's it going to change your day? Or how's it going to make you think differently about anything, his work? You know, it just goes to show, like, what we're living in. Like, we'll dig and dig and dig to get a reaction in any way we can. It's all about comments and likes, right? And so, to me, I thought it was the stupidest thing, because there is, for all these years, there's always been something really special about not knowing who he was and seeing the work. And to have a little bit of mystery somewhere, because there is no mystery anymore. Right. There's nothing like that.
Right.
So like to kind of out somebody for what? For what reason? So to me, it made no sense. I don't understand it. Maybe some people are really super happy about it, but why? I don't think they could give you a really great answer.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's I feel like it comes down to what we were talking about in the beginning, which is the importance of the preciousness of art in general, and how we one of the negatives, one of the many negatives of something like social media, is that something becomes a meme in conversation, and before you know it, there's so much misinformation that gets out there about something that it becomes almost irrelevant, at a certain point. And does it begin to damage everything that a character like Banksy may have done up to this point, because of the rush to find out? It almost turns them into a bad person. Right. They're a bad, if I don't know who it is, then, none of this is relevant that he's done.
Yeah.
or she's done, or whoever, nobody knows. I mean, even the fact that they were outed doesn't mean that that's them, right? Yeah. I mean, I would hope. I mean, that's how I feel about it.
That's kind of nice, because it's still kind of a mystery, right?
Yeah.
So, just, I think some things just should remain a mystery, and I don't think we really need to, we don't need to know everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
As we're kind of winding down, if someone could experience one of your pieces, something that's really personal to you, it could be something that nobody's ever seen, or maybe it's something that a lot of people have seen. What do you think that would be?
Oof. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't know. I don't really have an answer for that. Because every piece is very personal in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are long gone. Some of them are still out there, I think. And it's like trying to decide, like, which one of your kids you like more. And like, if you were to bring your kids somewhere, like, which one would you bring? I don't have an answer for that. I think right now, I have a couple of pieces out there that are special in a way that they're meant to be in uplifting. Like at the very moment, there's that one piece in Buffalo. And it reminds you, as you pass both highways on it, just whatever it is going through in life, don't give up. you know, and I think it's a special piece, just a simple message that I think we all can use these days, you know?
Sure.
And if you go to, you know, Miami, I have a piece called Desiderata, which is based on a poem. And it's basically a simple poem about how to live your life and sort of treat people the way you want to be treated. You know, those are good things to experience. But picking one from the portfolio to say, like, this is the one people need to see is really something I don't know if I could do.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's fair. That's a fair response. You know, we went to Buffalo. We try to go once a year. I went to college in Buffalo. You know, I have an unfortunate sort of connection to the Buffalo Bills. So we try to go see a game. And we made a special point to drive on the outside of the city so we could see, you know, your mural. And we were like, you know, so it's nice to see something that's so positive, but it's also nice to know who did it.
Yeah,
you know, and I sent a text to a friend of mine in Buffalo, two of them actually. There's an artist there in Buffalo named AJ Fries, who's in the Albright Knox, and he does a lot of shows in town. And I was like, dude, you got to go see my friend Joe put up. And he was like, oh man, yeah, I saw that. That's awesome. And you know, another artist that I know, I said the same thing, and he made sure that he checked it out.
Awesome.
So you know, that's to me that, you know, I think that's the importance of what it is that you do is create things that are publicly facing or hidden, you know, but somebody sees it and they want to push somebody to go see that, you know, you gotta take a walk on that trail and go look at that piece that's there next to that tree or climbing up a tree or on that windowsill or on the side of that building. I think we all, you know, as creative people want to see that. Now, you've done a lot of shows in the city. Do you obviously go to the openings? Do you how do you feel about when the work is enclosed in a space like that?
Yeah, it's always very, very difficult for me. I try to, so I love doing shows. I like seeing the work all together. When it's all together and it's cohesive, it always does like a sigh of relief, like, oh, like it actually feels good. But when I'm creating for a show and I'm in my studio, it's a little bit intense because my work is, I'm not a guy who's like, I'm not good at, like, I don't paint like landscapes, and I'm not super detailed in creating these like painting on canvas and these worlds that of imaginative, like it's really a lot about the character. There's like a central figure in the work, and oftentimes it needs outside, it needs the environment to sort of help tell that story. So in the studio, I use a lot of reclaimed wood objects, things that have had a previous life. Springsteen said something that I love. He said three words recently, and I say this explains it all. They said, why do you use the same guitar that you've had for like 60 years? Surely you could afford like a new one, right? He says, well, things collect soul. And so for me, I take a lot of old objects and reclaimed woods and things from, you know, and I use them as in my assemblages with the woodcut, because it gives me the sense that it's somewhere else, not just on a white, pristine white wall. It's living in another dimension maybe, and it has soul now, and it's got these textures and almost like it's outside. When you see the work up together on a wall and you see it in a gallery and it's all taken shape, it feels amazing, you know. But leading up to it, it's always like really, really difficult to do, because I like being outside, you know. I just like being outside. I like seeing work outside and thrive in those textures and those environments. And it's always been very hard for me to put something together to look good as decoration. And so, you know, by using those things, it helps me a lot.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Final question. If someone listening out there, if there are people that listen, feels stuck creatively, they've lost their spark, what would you do to tell them how to start climbing again?
Oh, that happens to me often.
Okay.
And what I think is really important is that you don't. So what I do is I, I learned that if I try to force myself to create, if I'm really lost it, if I'm really feeling I hit a sort of a brick wall and a dead end, it's okay to walk away from that work a little bit. It's okay to walk away from it and find something else that will occupy you. Learn something else. I tend to go down this thing with philosophies, and that book, there's a great book by Rick Rubin that actually helped me out at one point. The Creative Act was very helpful to me. And take a breath and realize it just isn't that important. You know what I mean? In the scheme of things, go out, go for a hike, read, listen to music, try not to focus and worry too much about it. And in the process, sometimes you find inspiration elsewhere. And that will recreate the spark to get you to. So I often hit this a lot, and especially when I'm creating at a pace that, like, I have to create a lot of work in a short amount of time, and I realize that, like, this is also not just me being an artist, but it's also I support my family. So there's no stop. I can't put my foot on the brakes. But if I keep going, I'm creating work that I'm not happy with. And then I hit the brick wall where it's like everything falls apart. So what I have to do is you just have to stop. Take a breath, turn your focus somewhere else a little bit, learn something else, like whatever it might be, or find solace in something beyond that. And, you know, sometimes it just takes a minute to reset. Don't put too much pressure on yourself to just keep going, because it'll only make things worse. So that's really like the only advice I can give, because, you know, telling someone, just keep going, just, you know, don't give up. Yeah, that's all true. But the reality is, like, we're not machines. You know what I mean? Like, every day is going to be different. You're going to feel different tomorrow than you did today. Live in the present, live in this moment. And if your body is telling you and your mind's telling you, like, this is not you right now, just listen to yourself. Walk away from it for a minute, regroup, come back to it. And you'll never leave, like find that spark. If it's not right there with that, it'll be with something else, and you'll move forward creatively.
That's a good end spot right there.
That's really all I. That's all I guess. That's all I got. And I'm saying that from a place where I'm like, you know, like I deal with that a lot, and I try to figure out what it is. How do I get past this? And the only way is to get past that is to live in this moment and forget about that for a second and realize that, like, it'll come back to me. You just give it time.
Joe Irado, thank you very much
for
your
time.
I hope we lived in a bit of a moment
now.
And
nice talk. I really appreciate being here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I really appreciate you being on this. Thanks man.